on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to a Thursday edition of InvestTalk. It is September 10th, 2015. We're here to talk about money, your money in particular. And any discussion of money, of course, as you know, involves human nature. Just as you can tell a great deal about a person by the way they spend their money, how they acquire it and save it can give you a pretty good picture as well. Okay, so whether that person is likely to achieve more financial goals or not, spending and saving. Got a lot of family members that don't quite understand that concept. You know, maybe you should stop spending so much so you could save more. The goal for most of us is to be financially independent, but most of us are not doing that, are not working toward that goal. So if you were to set out to imitate one of the better people out there that do know how to accumulate money, Warren Buffett, Peter Lynch, those kinds of people, Rockefeller, what are the characteristics of successful investors have? What do they have that all of us may not have? And what can we try to accumulate? Or like, how do we follow them? How do we do it? John D. Rockefeller was quoted as saying, "Do you know the only thing that gives me pleasure is to see my dividends come in?" Now, I hope that's not you. There must be other richer treasures in life than just dividends. But to manage money successfully, you do have to have a focus. His was dividends, collecting dividends. You know, he made it a priority. What is your focus? How do you accumulate wealth? What is your goals? And how are you achieving that? Warren Buffett, here's a quote. "The rich invest in time, the poor invest in money. The rich invest in time, and the poor invest in money." What does he mean by that? The folks on investorguide.com put together a list of 15 traits of highly successful investors. The number one on that list was learning. Highly successful investors are proactive learners. How do you learn? You be a proactive reader. Read everything. I don't know if I'm a proactive learner, but I can tell you this, I read constantly. I think I drive my wife nuts because I'm always reading. And I'm reading a variety of things. You would have to describe me as a voracious reader. So successful investors are voracious readers. They are. Now, I don't know how successful I am. I'm pretty successful, but you know, I don't want to pat myself on the back too hard. But reading, I enjoy it. I really do enjoy it. So if you know, when you read, you learn. You learn more and more and more. And that's how you need to be a proactive learner. I don't care if you want to learn in investing, you want to learn how to buy growth stocks only, or like Rockefeller, dividend stocks. You just, whatever it is, you just want to learn everything. Your learning cup is never full. And of course, that's why one reason I asked you to join InvestTalk Insiders. You can have access to all our webinars, breaking the risk barrier, measure managing investment risk, a bunch of other topics, doing dividends right, which is a kind of a crash course on dividend investing. We have info sheets on all kinds of investing topics. I write many of those. Justin writes many of those. These are simple, straightforward pieces written by Justin and myself to help you. It's free to join, and it's a good resource, hopefully, for you. Also, to see a list of books that we recommend, just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to the recommended books title. You'll see them. So, I don't know. I just think we all want to learn more and continue to grow in our knowledge of how to invest. I like doing it. And I think, you know, if you're listening to the show, you always have interest and you want to learn more. And that's just a good start. you can become a better investor. I appreciate you spending this hour with me. I'll try to make it worth your while. Right now, let's get to our conversation. We can start right now. You can get through at 888-99-CHART. You can call me anytime you want. So let's take this question that came in before today's program.
Hi, my name is Mike with Tracy, California. I just started to listen to your podcast recently. Great show. Thank you. My question is it best to reinvest your dividends back into the company or take your dividends and reinvest it to other possible opportunities? Thank you. Have a good day.
Now, of course, that is a personal question. For myself, if you ask me, I'd rather not reinvest in the stock that I bought that's paying me the dividend. I'd rather look for something else. One of the reasons in a non-taxable account, it messes up the cost basis. And so you got to now figure out, well, what's my cost basis of this? So if I ever sell it and I have capital gains, how much are my gains? That it just messes up that mathematics a little bit. And you can keep track of it. Obviously, you can. I just don't care to. But I do, when I invest a certain amount of money in a particular stock, that's how much I want in that asset. Then I want so much in some other assets. I want to spread the risk. I don't want it to keep accumulating that same asset, that same stock over and over and over again. Because that also, remember we talked about rebalancing portfolios? Well, it makes it harder if you know the dividend's always going to be buying more and more and more stock over the next quarter, next year, year after year, and it gets out of balance faster. So I don't care. That's my personal opinion. A lot of people build wealth by reinvesting dividends in the same dividend-paying stocks. It's not a bad thing. There's not a right or wrong thing to do here. It's just a preference, and that my preference is not to reinvest it. I hope that helps. While target-dated funds are vehicles of convenience, they invest in several mutual funds in one package, they may be loaded with inappropriate amounts of risk. It's how to defuse a 401k bomb. And, you know, this article's picked not because I don't care for target-dated funds, because I don't, but, you know, I like to point out some of the weaknesses in target-dated funds. My biggest issue with target-dated funds is that they're picked by, that these things were invented by mutual funds to make it quote-unquote easier for you. You pick a date you retire and then it's on a glide path and they allegedly take less and less risk. When in actuality, just as much a reason why they invented these things is that they don't ever want you to trade. They want you to keep the money with them always. Don't move it. Don't cause any disruptions of any kind. That's just as much as the reason why they invented these things as it is to help you, you know, on a glide path to retirement. So there's problems with these, and I want to talk about that. Also, you know what has not been in the news lately? Greece. I want to give you an update on what's going on in Greece and what I think is going to happen. Oil prices are likely to stay under $100 for the foreseeable future. I don't see it going over $100 maybe for a very long time. And I don't think it's even going to go up to $100 for a very long time. It could spike there, but I don't think so. Why do I say that? Why is that something I want to discuss? Doesn't mean, well, we'll get into that. I don't want to. Inheritance. Will that save your retirement? Will that save everybody's retirement? If there's so much money that we get to inherit that we don't have to worry about retirement, what do you think the answer is on that? Those things we're going to talk about today, unless, of course, you call and you want to bring up a particular subject, because that is what we talk about first. The market did gain today. I don't know if you saw it, but it was kind of weak for most of the day. The futures had the market up almost like 1% or so. But that's not what happened when it opened. It opened up very flat, stayed that way for quite some time, then started to slowly build. The Dow got up to about 150 points or so, and then fell off. And then toward the end of the last half hour, it came back. So the Dow ended up being up 77 points, the NASDAQ up 40, and the S&P up 10. So it got back some of the losses yesterday, maybe a third to a half of the losses of yesterday. And okay, the market is trading sideways now. and is forming what we call a triangle pattern. Sideways triangle pattern with the point sticking out to the right. The base is that big up and down movement it had in August, but we're still well below the point where this started to move downward. So the market's still 7-8% below loss for the year, about 7 or 8%. 9-11% below its high for the year. You know, it depends on what index you're talking, what exactly were we discussing. Are we talking about intraday high, closing high? You know, those kinds of things. So I'm just trying to give you some ballparkish numbers. So we're still down for the year. We're in the midst of a correction. Still in the midst. Corrections usually, you know, work their way out over a couple of months or longer, not a couple of weeks. So there's nothing unusual about this. So far, it would not be surprising if it retests the lows that it made in August. That would be a normal thing to do. And the more it retests that low, the better you should feel about the market not moving into a bear market, that we're going to have a rise at some point. But really hasn't really retested the lows yet. Made a faint attempt at it about a week or so ago, but didn't get close enough, in my opinion, to be a true retest. So that's where we are. What do you think we should do? What do you think you should do? You know, or should you even react to this? A lot of people, I will tell, don't react to it at all. Just relax. You only and some people don't react even to bear market, which is 20% or more down, which would be like it was in 2008. But for the rest of us, I like to say, well, I wouldn't react until at least we have some hints of a recession down the road. Otherwise, you know, don't react too much, you know, to any of these corrections, because it would be just a correction. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. We're here to talk about your money, and not just investing, but all kinds of money issues. So I try to help clients unravel some of the everyday money problems they have in life, you know, mortgages, college education funds, whatever money issue that might be facing them or you. It's time to give us a call. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Daniel in Palo Alto. He wants to talk about the Fed. How you doing, Daniel?
Hey, Steve. Good to talk to you. Listen to you on 1220.
Thank you.
I just had a quick question. I got out rightly or wrongly around Black Monday, mm-hmm. just because of the volatility, and I'm kind of working my way back into the market. And I just wondered really quickly, would one strategy with the Fed meeting coming up be to go in, take maybe half positions, and then, you know, if there's a violent reaction to their meeting, adding another half position?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that strategy. If you're out, Daniel, like you say, you're out, and you want to try to work your way in, because no one really knows what the Fed's going to do. The odds are they're going to do nothing. That's the odds. But doing nothing, does that mean the market will rise? I don't think so. I don't want you to assume just because they do nothing that the market will rise. And I don't want you to assume if they do increase the rates, I think the market could rise if they do. It doesn't necessarily mean that it will go down, because everybody, you know what I mean? So the half position, I think, is a good strategy, Daniel. I think it's a good strategy.
Okay, and just wait until it's over.
And then move from there, yes. Thank you for the call, Daniel. I appreciate it. You can see the latest dates for retirement reviews on investtalk.com. I'll be meeting folks on September 23rd at our data point office, Orange County. That's in South Orange County. And then San Ramon on September 30th. If you'd like to schedule a retirement portfolio review with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Too many people put their money into a grab bag of holdings with no thought on how the parts should fit together. The danger of over-diversifying your mutual funds. That's our talking point for Friday's podcast. Bring your questions and join us then You can talk live to Steve, 4 p.m. Pacific time on InvestTalk.
888-992-4278. How to defuse a 401k bomb that might be building. And this is an article I'm referring to, and you'll see it on our InvestTalk.com website. We're talking about target dated funds. That's what this article is referring to. And just so we quickly review, target dated funds are those funds that you have in your 401k that has a date, 2020, 2025, 2030, 2035. You pick the date that you are going to retire. That's the target date of your retirement. And the fund, the target dated fund, is on a glide path. And allegedly, the thinking is you'll take less risk as you move closer to that target date. And that less risk usually means more bond exposure, less stock exposure. But you know what? No one target date. There's no, like, you can buy a 2025 target date in different mutual funds having those target date, and they act very differently. There's no rules that, okay, that means if it's 2025 you target date, then there's 30% bonds right now, and all the target dates of 2025 and all the different funds have the same 30%. No, you have to look inside. So you can't just assume what's going to be inside there. You have to see it. And remember, these are funds of funds. These target-dated funds own mutual funds inside them. So, who has the broadest diversification? Are they very diversified? Do they move more into bonds and out of stocks? And what kind of stocks do they own? Are they growth stocks? Are they dividend-paying stocks? What kind are they? Are they global stocks? And if the bond portion is getting bigger and bigger and bigger as you get closer to the date, what kind of bonds? Junk bonds? High quality bonds? Treasuries? Municipal bonds? What kind of bonds? And what are the maturity dates of those bonds? If interest rates go up, if interest rates are very long in the target date of bond, very long, those are much more exposed. The maturity dates, talked about maturity dates. If they're very long, they are much more exposed to interest rate movement, and they could collapse hard if interest rates go up. So you can't just say, oh, I've got a 2030 target dated fund in my 401k, and I just don't even think about it. It's automatic. Well, the mutual fund industry would love you to have that kind of attitude. They want you to have that kind of attitude because they want you to leave it alone, never touch it. You can't afford to have that kind of attitude. You need to know what's in there. And what will happen if we have another market like 2008? Well, what happened? If interest rates rise, what will happen? You know, remember, the closer you get to the target date, the more they will have bond funds, generally speaking. Less exposure to the stock market. What if you wanted more exposure to the stock market? What if your target dated fund has 80% exposure to bond market at 2025? Or 100%? You don't even know. You have to find out. I'm just telling you that don't think you can set it and forget it. You need to know what's inside the target dated fund. And not just today. As it gets closer to the date, how does it change? Because it changes, it's going to change as you get closer and closer to the target date. It's going to change what the holdings are. And it's okay to change. You just need to know what it is. Our phone is always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more complex question. Doesn't matter. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
I have a question. The difference between par value and book value. I would appreciate your comments. Thank you.
The difference between par value and book value, those are comparing apples and oranges. Par value, you're referring to bonds. Book value, you're referring to a corporation's value if they sold all their assets. Par means you sell a bond at par, meaning 100 or 1,000. It's usually expressed in $100 or $1,000. That's the par value of the bonds that are being issued. Now, as the life of the bond continues, it could sell at a discount or premium to par, the book value, the par value of that bond. Book value is, I have a company here and I want to know what the stock price is selling. If I liquidated all the assets of the company, what it would be worth per stock, per share, what it would be worth, and how much is it selling above book value or below book value of the corporation, the value of the company. So par value and book value are apples and oranges. They don't relate to each other. Okay? Don't confuse them. They're not related. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Did we see what happened in the market today? Was there any reason for it? There was really no big news out. Everybody's kind of holding their breath for the Federal Reserve next week. I think it's the 12th or the 15th. I'm not sure of the date. When they meet, their next meeting. Everybody's been anticipating the meeting, just like they always do. The Federal Reserve's going to meet next, the middle of September, then again in October, and then again in December. Will the Federal Reserve raise rates? That's the big question. Should they raise rates? Another big question. Most people don't think they should. I don't think they should. I don't think our economy is strong enough. And I don't think they... they're only raising rates because they think they have to. They're only considering because they think they have to, because that zero is abnormal, which is true. This is Invest Talk. We're glad you're here today. Any money questions you have should be part of our discussion. So give me a call, 888-99-CHARLES. Chart 888-992-4278. Greece, where no one's talking about it. It's off the news. It's off the headlines because they got an $86 billion bailout. Greece is having a new election in this month. And then in October, they're going to talk about, what they need to do, make changes in the economy, and blah, 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 blah. But it's not dead. Do you realize that Greece, I hate to say this, but they have been borrowing money since 1833. Do you know that first time they borrowed money, the Greek government, took them 100 years to pay it off? 100 years. They had been in a cycle of this debt forever. And they're not going to get out of it. I don't see how that's going to work. The IMF, International Monetary Fund, says that they need more debt relief. In other words, write off a bunch of debt. All you people who loaned them money, write it all off. It'll only work if you write it all off, if they start borrowing money. When they think that they don't need to borrow money, they don't need to pay it off, or they have no method or desire to pay it off. Look at all those strikes. Look at what's going on in the streets of Greece. They don't want austerity. They don't want austerity. But the only way you have no austerity is you've been borrowing money. That's how you've been living since 1833. And I'm not blaming Greece, okay? Europe is in the same path. U.S. is in the same path. We have this addiction to debt worldwide. But when you have a people that think they don't ever have to pay it off or pay it back, that they don't have to pay the debt back, they don't want austerity. They want to just live off other people's money. And without any desire or moral belief that they need to pay it back, then they're never going to be out of the debt cycle. Never. You have to have the belief that you got to pay your bills. If you don't have that belief that you don't have to pay the bills, then you're just going to live on everybody else's money. And don't think the other side who's lending you money is free of guilt. Why are you lending them money? Stop. You're just as bad by lending it to them. You're letting them have that belief by allowing them the belief that they don't have to pay it. It's stupid. It's just, why are you lending them money knowing that you're not going to get your money back? That makes no sense. The people you're lending the money to think they don't have to pay you back. And you lend them more money. This is what I don't understand. I'm just talking about Greece because they're the worst example out there. But this is going on. It's getting to a point where everybody thinks they don't have to pay the money back. Of course you got to pay the money back. Who is lending you the money? People think that it's banks and governments lending the money. Well, where are they getting the money? It comes from somewhere. And people are saying, well, they just print it. Just print more money. Just make it out of air. You think that works? There's been examples throughout history that that comes to a screeching halt at some point. And it destroys economies. Destroys just currencies. It has runaway inflation. We've seen this on over and over and over in history. It can work for a long time. That doesn't work forever. There has to be a belief that the debt will be paid, and there has to be efforts to pay the debt. It's just that simple. Then the economy will continue to go. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask, and we'll answer it on the next InvestTalk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Gilberto San Mateo. I'm a long-time listener and subscriber. Hi, Steve. The stuff that I'm interested in is Sprint with the symbol S. It seems like it's a bargain right now. Please tell me the point of entry, because I'm about to buy it. Thank you.
Sprint. Everybody who Sprint is provides digital wireless voice data services to 57 million subscribers in the U.S., Puerto Rico, and Virgin Islands. It's a $19 billion company. I would not buy Sprint. Do you realize they have not made a profit for years? They're not going to make a profit this year. They're not going to make a profit next year. And they're not going to make a profit the year after. They have large debt. This is a company, to me, looks like it's going to go bankrupt. Yes, it's a $19 billion company. Yes, they make $8 billion a quarter, but they don't make any money. How are they going to make profit? Why do you want to buy a company that doesn't make money? And they have lots of debt. They got a new CEO last year, a year ago September, but, you know, it's a $4.82 stock for a reason. It's not cheap. It's expensive at $4.82. Why do I say it's expensive? Because they don't make any money. Whether a company is cheap, a company's stock is cheap or expensive, all boils down to how much earnings per share they make. They make nothing. Think about it this way. You had a business. You're self-employed. And you have a business, and you're making no money. Then you say, well, gee, I wonder if someone else will buy my business. I'm going to try to sell it. You're not making money. You haven't made money. You're not going to make money. Who are you going to convince to buy your business? And that's exactly what you're doing. You are being convinced to buy this stock at $4.82. A business, remember, the stock is ownership of this business. A business that's not making money. The only way you are convinced to buy this company is you think it's going to make money someday. Well, I'm telling you, there's no hope in the next couple of years for it to make money. It should be selling at 10 cents a share. It should be selling at zero, a penny. No, there's no money. It's not a business at this point. And you're buying a name called Sprint. You're buying the sales of $8 billion a quarter, thinking, wow, it makes a lot of sales. But who cares if they're not going to ever make money? This company is worth more if it liquidates. You could argue the fact that say, well, I'll buy the company because I know it's worth more in liquidation. But it also has huge debt. It's got to pay that first. And since management doesn't own hardly any of this stock, maybe, you know, it's not a good idea for you to own it. Just my thought. I would not buy Sprint. Would not buy it at all. Time for Invest Talk Personal. Everybody money, everyday money decisions that have a great impact on you. Yesterday, I passed along some advice about AARP for those of us who use online banking, which is about 50% of everybody. You know that? It's generally pretty darn safe to do online banking. But here's some suggestions. When you download the app on your iPhone or iPad and you're going to be, going to be mobile, use their bank's official app, not some other apps that are bank apps. Okay, go to the bank's website and download your own bank's app. Okay. Don't do online banking from a public Wi-Fi hotspot. They're not usually encrypted. Also, set your laptop, tablet, or smartphone so that you have to manually select Wi-Fi network, not automatic, especially if you're doing banking online. People can hack into your system. Secure the smartphone itself. In other words, use its screen locking system with the password or your thumb, you gotta have some screen security for the phone itself, not just the app, but in addition to the app. Okay? And when you do end your banking session, don't just turn off the phone. Actually in the session. Don't stay in the session and then turn off the phone. In the session, then turn off the phone. Okay? That's InvestTalk 101. If you have more questions on this topic or you'd like to add to the discussion, give me a call. 888-99-CHART.
It's not just about getting better organized. It's about reducing anxiety. It's about feeling more confident that you'll achieve your long-term financial goals. It's dispelling the fog, getting a correct assessment of the core risks and expected return of your portfolio. Each month, Steve meets with a limited number of InvestTalk listeners for informal retirement reviews. The next date is at our home office in Dana Point in Orange County on September 23rd. Then it's off to San Ramon. Steve will be there September 30th. You can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com on a first-come, first-served basis and click on Schedule a Meeting, or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
This is Daniel in Mountain View. Just had a quick question regarding Whole Foods. Just a quick question. I'm an owner of it and tempted to just hang on to it, not to buy more, on the belief that it's a high-end store and customers are going to be loyal to it and are not going to go to Walmart or elsewhere for their organic produce in it. Plus, it has lots of other advantages and products and are lowering their prices. Just want to know what you all thought about my holding it, or where you would set a stop, and whether you'd actually be buyers of it at this price. They have like 150 outlets or maybe more than that. So anyway, just wanted your wisdom on it, not mine, and would be grateful to hear any comments you might have about the future of the stock and my holding of putting it on hold. Thank you, gentlemen, so much. Listen to you on 1220 and podcasts religiously. Take care.
Now, I like Whole Foods. WFM is the symbol. It operates 399 stores and 381 in the United States, 9 in Canada, and 9 in the United Kingdom. The issue is competition. We all knew that they would have competition eventually, the organic food competition. Organic food is a movement that is gaining strength worldwide, or at least in the Western nations. And I think it's going to continue. I think their concept is very good. High quality, high-end food store. The issue is, though, they are going to move into the not high-end. They're going to open up a retail food stores that are going to compete with the Albertsons and Costco. And I think that's a mistake, personally speaking. And I think they're doing that because I know same-store sales for Whole Foods is not very strong. And that's how most retail outfits are judged, by their same store sales year over year over year. And Whole Foods is slowly falling because I think people are realizing they can get their organic food from Costco. Costco is the biggest seller of organic foods in the nation. Did you know that? Costco is. Probably in the world, to be honest. But I know in the nation. And Whole Foods is competing with them. I don't think they should compete in that area. They should compete in the high-end, high-quality, high-end grocery store area. But it looks like they're moving down to they're trying to move down the high-end area to a broader audience. And I think that's a mistake. Now, I think Whole Foods is cheap where it is. At $33 a share, they're going to make $1.78. They're still growing 7 to 10% earnings and sales. Their P.E. ratio has always been kind of high. The lowest it's ever been in 5 years is 18, and it's 19 right now. So is this a place to buy? Well, I think this is a good place to own Whole Foods, you know, at the price level. If it breaks below that low it made when the market fell, then I'd probably get out and be done with it, because the food business is tough. It's a tough business. But I do like Whole Foods. I think their concept is good. They're just going to have competition. They're going to have to compete. I think that they should stay in the high end. I think about companies like Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's has very focused. They don't have big stores. Their concept, their trade, their brand is small stores, low price, high quality food. I think the brand for Whole Foods is bigger stores, high end, and high quality food. High-end store, expensive things. You don't go to Whole Foods for cheap food. You go to Whole Foods because it's got the best there is out there, the best, the high quality. I think if they stay there, they'll do fine. They try to compete in the low end, I think they're in trouble. And it looks like that's what they're trying to do. And therefore, it's not a stock I would want to own because of that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We gave an update on Greece. I think Greece is going to be in trouble all along. How about oil prices? Are oil prices going to recover? Do we think that oil is going to stay where it is? No, I don't think so. Do you think it's going to go over $100 a barrel? I don't think so for years. The foreseeable future, no, I don't see it. So what do I think is going to happen? That's what we're going to talk about. Also is inheritance. Is the amount of money being inherited by the next generation enough for them to retire on? Do you think it is? What do you think? If you have a question you want answered right now, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me. That's 888-992-4278. And you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. And please give me a call.
Isn't it kind of risky to invest when public sentiment is so negative? Or what's your question? Ask it right now. 888-99-CHART on Invest Talk. Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. In a world that becomes more complex every day, KPP investment programs are designed to simplify the individual investment process. Diversified portfolios transition as the global market environment dictates. KPP recognizes that each individual has their own investment goals and risk tolerance, so no matter where priorities lie, everyday investors anywhere in the U.S. can find a program that's appropriate. To see more about them, visit investtalk.com. And click on the investment tab. And thanks for listening.
888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Alan in San Francisco. How you doing, Alan?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really enjoy listening to you on the radio all the time. You're just a storehouse of fantastic information and helpful attitude, everything.
Thanks for the information.
Sure, you're the best. I love listening to you. This is kind of an off the wall question. I inherited money, and I have this part of it was in those bonds that people buy at work.
Okay. Were they government bonds, or were they treasuries, U.S. treasuries, or municipal bonds?
There's a bunch of certificates, and when my mother passed away, they were worth $7,000, and that was 6 years ago.
Okay.
So I'm kind of wondering. I don't know. I have to get them out because my lawyer told me they were worth that, but they're in the safe deposit box. But I don't know how much. I'm looking for money right now.
Okay.
And I wanted to know how much you think they might have gone up, if you have any opinion about that.
Well, it depends on the kinds of bonds. If they're zero coupon bonds, they're worth what the face value of the bonds are. It depends on the kinds of bonds, Alan. There's no way to know it unless I look at them. So what you need to you need to take them out and go to a Schwab or somebody, a brokerage firm, and then they can tell you what they're worth.
Okay. The bank can tell you. Okay, that's a good idea. Okay. I don't have a Schwab account at this time, but I will get one.
Yeah, you don't have to have an account to have someone tell you what they were. They have what they call is a CUSIP number on them. CUSIP, C-U-S-I-P number. It's a big, long number somewhere and small somewhere on there. And they can use that number to help them determine what the value is. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much. I had no idea what to do.
That's how you do it.
Okay.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay.
You can also take them to a bank, Alan. Just go to a regular bank, your bank. You don't have to take them to a trading house. Go to your bank first, because that whoever you have your checking account, your savings account, they will do it for free. Okay? Thanks for the call, Alan. Appreciate it. Oil prices. Okay, I think they're going to stay under $100 a barrel for the foreseeable future. I can't see how that's going to go up above that anytime soon. And I think they're going to be range-bound. Oil, you know, right now, what are they, about $40, $45? Between 45 and 80, they're going to kind of swing in there. I could see that happen for a long time, too. Because demand in the United States for oil is going down. I know you know that because I've said it before. Demand for oil in the United States is going down. Gasoline demand is going down. We're using less gas than we used to. And I don't see that changing. And maybe we should thank Elon Musk for that, for, you know, the all-electric cars. Okay, but I don't think that's changing. Okay, and I actually feel growth worldwide for oil is still increasing. Okay, it's still increasing. It's increasing in China, Asia, I don't know about Europe, South America, most places, because their middle class is growing. Ours is mature. Theirs is not. Okay, so, also, one of the reasons why, you know, you can thank fracking for the reduction of demand for oil. And you're going to say, huh? Why would I think fracking? Well, at the very least, fracking is going to probably put a big kibosh on deep water drilling. Because the fracking is getting cheaper and cheaper. The technology is getting better and better. And a lot of fracking, they get a lot of natural gas. And the natural gas is really inexpensive, and you can use natural gas instead of gasoline or any distillates from oil. You can use natural gas, and that's a much cleaner burning fuel. We got plenty of it, and every time you frack, there's a lot of fracking oil, fracking wells that hit oil, natural gas first and foremost. So there's, and then you think about wind farms and solar energy. All those things are still going to continue to grow, putting more pressure downward on oil prices. I think we're in a situation where, you know, oil is going to have to compete with other forms of producing energy. And it always has been, but now it's got more competition coming. So I don't think oil prices are going to go up that high. Before we close for the hour, watch anyone of a whole... You can watch any one of our library of webinars. You can watch any of them if you like. That's just one of the resources available to InvestTalk Insiders. You can join it for free on InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and on behalf of Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial, thanks for listening today, and we hope you'll do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.